Podcast, Season 6, Episode 142. Let's start another design studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in cloudy Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in freezing sub-zero temperature Montclair, New Jersey.
Ooh, Sandy, what's your temperature?
It's balmy 20 degrees.
Oh, my God. We were in the teens this morning.
Mm-hmm. Lori, I think we should never move. Let's talk about what's happening in studios, because today we're going to have Lori join us. So we'll give her a formal introduction in a few moments. But for us, I mean, it's the start of the new year and it's busy. But in addition to just being design busy, we've had canceled shows busy, which means reshuffling travel agendas and scheduling. I just lost 2 weeks of travel with my beautiful wife. We were actually going to do an event together and head out to Tampa for a week and then Vegas for a week. And we had planned some nice dinners and stuff around the work, and that all went away. I think we've lost a total of 7 meetings in the past week, which is graphics ops on site, you know, handling presentation work that suddenly we're without. Conversely, I think we've picked up 13 virtual events because everything is moving. So it's an up and down thing.
So that's an indicator of certainly something in this world.
I absolutely think so. So how are you guys doing? What's up?
Speaking of which, I'm booking remote trainings and I've got a couple of my long-term clients who are just booking the whole year. They're just saying, look, we're not going to do this like every couple months. We're just, here are the dates for 2022. So we're booking all of them in advance. And I guess for at least those clients, those are all going to be remote. Which is fine. You know, we know what's coming. I'm working on that presentation for my town on our local budget, which I think I had mentioned.
I think I saw a Facebook post about this.
Yeah. So, we've got a couple weeks left, and, the more you get into a local town budget, just the more complex and befuddling it becomes for somebody who's not really a numbers person. Because everybody else I'm working with are like CPAs and like economics professors. They're all like local people who have an interest, and I keep having to ask them to explain things to me.
I think you should run for controller and just say, okay, guys, we got to dumb it down to my level. Yeah. That way everybody understands. Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, and that's the challenge. Oh, so I keep saying, look, I'm not the numbers guy here, and I don't understand it. Therefore, nobody else is.
But, that's awesome.
That's a good project, and we're selling the PowerPoint source files for the Better Deck Deck. Those are selling well, which is great because I don't have to package anything up and get them to UPS. They just digital download, and excellent. It's just going to be for another a little very short time. That'll be 50% off. So if you haven't picked one up yet, pick them up now. Sandy, what's happening in your world?
Well, I'm trying to get materials into my clients' hands before we leave for the UK.
Ooh.
Oh, that's and right. That, wedding.
Yeah.
This is
yes,
a big
wedding
deal.
In
yeah.
The UK. It is. It also involves a lot of paperwork and keeping up with different governments' statuses as far as what you need to do and don't need to do. It changes very often. So, but work is great. It's been very, very busy. I'm putting it in the trusty arms of Chloe Meisner, whom I've worked with for years. So she'll be taking it and running with it and supporting my clients when I'm out of the office.
Excellent. Excellent.
How about you, Lori?
Hey there. I hear you. So like Troy, a lot of our on-site events canceled. However, last week I was in San Diego. And next week, in theory, I'll be in Phoenix. But one thing that Troy brought up is it seems like on-site shows that have non-employee audiences, if that makes sense. So it's not a company sending all their salespeople. Rather, it's people from different sectors that aren't controlled by a company. Those seem to still be happening.
Like trade shows and conferences and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Last week, it was a bunch of doctors. You know, coming in. Next week, I I'm doing a fashion show.
Awesome.
So I know. What are you wearing? Right? Black.
I hear that's in again.
I tell you.
Show black never goes out of popularity.
Never. Yep. Yep. Exactly. And yeah, so just I'm doing a little bit of traveling and that, and I need to pack up the Christmas decorations.
Oh, yes.
Just saying.
I got that done.
Oh, I got the outdoors done, which is a big task. All the outdoors is, except for the porch lights, the carriage lights are still red and green. We noticed just the other night. I'm like, oh, I guess I gotta go change those over. Hey, let's jump over to presentation industry news, and I've got an exciting one to kick it off with. I'm very excited about this. Tools 2 is one of my all-time long-running favorite PowerPoint add-ins. It is Windows only, just to throw it out there. It is really, really good. I mean, there's a lot of overlap between features, but they just released version 10.0. I also just did on, Monday, the 10th, so a week ago, I did a blog post kind of highlighting it. But one of the cooler things in it is this, what they're calling chaining, but it's only within their tool set. I hope it kind of expands. But it's the idea that you could say, I want you to do this, which is remove all extra master slides. Let's see, what's the common one I do? What do we do, Lori? Select a set of slides. Then you hit the chain. It will save out a new deck of just those slides, and it will remove all unused master slides. It's like using four of their tools in a row. So one button does a whole bunch. It's like, basically.
So it's like a macro?
It's like a macro.
Yeah, that's okay. A macro. There you go.
And it only works within the Tools 2 thing. I'm kind of hoping that it expands to be like PowerPoint native tools and maybe even other ones. But it's got some very cool features. I mean, it's my absolute number one to go to because it does same rounded corner. If you paddle with rounded corners and they always look the same, that's the number one tool in it. You should buy it just for that little feature right there. What else you got in the news?
Well, I can't believe it's been almost a year. Time goes so fast, but Present to Succeed, the conference is in April already. A few months out. So I think you two are presenting, right? I mean, tell me about what you're presenting and when you're on and that sort of thing, or if that's been fleshed out yet.
I am slotted to do a talk on PowerPoint templates, but it's PowerPoint templates for the presenter or the business user. And I'm going to cover nine. I have a great title for this talk that I don't have in front of me, but it's basically nine PowerPoint tips, PowerPoint template tips you need to know. It's a much better title than that because I don't have it in front of me. But so I'm talking about PowerPoint templates. Nolan, what are you doing?
They gave me 20 minutes. I'm going to talk about tables for 20 minutes. So I think I did a lot last year. So this year is a light year. But yeah, 20 minutes and we'll improve your tables. Sandy,
a little break for you. Well-deserved. Yeah. Well, listen, I haven't put my name in the hat for any presentations this year. I just, I keep looking at the deadlines for submitting and I keep missing them. So I guess that's a good news, bad news kind of thing, because it's fun being on the staff of a conference and everything. But anyway, that said, the presentation podcast, I just want everyone to know that Boris, who drives this whole Present to Succeed conference, he's going to be our guest in March. I think episode 146, Joy.
That's what it's slated for. I think it'll be good. It's like weeks before the conference. So
that's going to be awesome.
Fun to get a little insight and hear about the hecticness of what they're doing. Absolutely.
And there's another online conference, from Creative Pro in March 10th to 11th. This year it's being called the Design Plus PowerPoint Summit. I'm speaking there. It's a 2-day online summit. They did it last year under a different name. So I'll be speaking. Echo will be speaking. Gar Reynolds is going to be there as well. Steffi Hogan and Mark Heaps and Mike Parkinson.
A lot of
the familiar names. And I think I'm speaking for the first time on templates along with Echo. We're bouncing back and forth there. And if you do want to sign up for that, you can use a discount code. There's a bunch out there, but mine is CPN, as in Creative Pro Network. So CPN Nolan, and that'll get you some advanced discounts. And very we'll, awesome. We'll put all that in the show notes. And one last thing, there's a new add-in that I found on the scene. I don't know if you guys saw this from Heron Consulting. Wasn't familiar with them. I think they're in Europe, but it's called the Heron PowerPoint add-in. And it is similar. It's I have not played too extensively with it, but it seems sort of similar in the vein of Tools 2 and BrightSlide, and that it's a suite of tools to do various things, create org charts and agenda slides and do some of those other things that PowerPoint doesn't do natively. So, and it's free, PowerPoint PC only, but it is free. So feel free to check that out, and we'll put the link in the show notes for that.
Heronconsulting.se. Yeah. So that's Sweden, isn't it?
Oh, it is Sweden. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, you would know.
Okay. is that Windows and Mac?
Yes, just Windows.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So take a look at it. I mean, there's all the a lot of these tools have a lot of overlap, but each one have their own things that if you might find a gem in there.
Okay, for this podcast, we have a conversation that we have been having internally at TLC Creative, which means Lori and I have been talking about it. And this is kind of over the past several months. So I asked Nolan and Sandy to kind of join that conversation. And we also have, as you heard, Lori Collar from TLC Creative Services joining us for this episode. Very excited about this. The title is Internal versus Independent Designers. Now let's level set here. This is not about who is better, who knows more. This is about the mindset of how each approaches the task of visual design for presentations, how each reacts to client requests for the presentation, the design, or even the template. I think we have some great takeaways that every presentation designer can use in this conversation. So Nolan, start us off.
All right. So internal versus independent. Let's sort of all define what that means, because I think we might have some different definitions and you all guys may have some different definitions. And as we're going to discover, there's some gray area. But for me, when I use those terms, my definition of an internal designer is one that works on staff or an organization or a company and works really only on that employer's projects or that employer's clients, whereas in independent designers, a hired gun works on multiple clients, probably has more agency, in choosing projects, no pun intended. but for me, that, again, sort of leaves a little bit of a gray area for designers on staff at design agencies, right, who they've got their clients but that they have to answer to, but then they also have their own boss who's given them the paycheck each week to answer to as well. So that's where I'm coming from. What do you guys think? Lori,
I think that's a really good point on that gray area. And I think it's a good distinction. Perhaps we have internal, independent, and hybrid designers, perhaps. Maybe those hybrid designers would fall into that agency bucket. But that being said, I think for all intents and purposes for this conversation, I would suppose that agency designers could still be considered independent. To your point, mm-hmm. as they, like many and most independent designers, they do often work with multiple clients, with multiple mm-hmm. projects versus what we might think of as an internal designer that works for a company. And so they are more invested in one brand or one train of thought.
So independent being someone that may work internally for... Oh, never mind. You know what? I agree with you both. And I think I do. I think you've nailed it as far as the spectrum goes. So Troy, why don't you take a stab at summarizing what Lori and Nolan just said?
Oh my gosh. I totally agree. And I think that's why we're having the conversation, because it's a hard one to kind of, consolidate into, a couple of little buckets here. For me, internal is someone that is just being a designer and does not have to weigh in or have the weight of client relations and billing and accounting and all those messy things of running a business. They get mm-hmm. to just be the fun designer. There are obviously office politics and things they have to work with, but they don't really have to deal with the non-design tasks as much. Independent, hey, some extra freedoms such as saying this is not a client or project for me. I mean, that's something, you know, and an employee really doesn't get the chance to say often, like, I really don't want to deal with this. They're like, that's your job. But, you know, there is all those business tasks that the independent person needs to pile into their, you know, their bag of responsibilities. I don't know if we've clarified anything here, guys, but it's a big conversation, and I'm
thank you,
excited
good night.
To have it. Okay, yeah. Somebody take us somewhere.
Yeah, no, I think in a sense we're saying independent, but a lot of times we're also implying employee. And when we say, this is going to be tricky. Yeah, no, a lot of times I think when we say internal, we're often saying employee, and when we say independent, we're often saying freelance. But I do think internal and independent are a better, broader phrase. So using our definitions, are you now or have you ever been an independent or an internal designer?
Are you now or have, it's like a congressional. I guess I've done it all. I've worked for a creative agency as a designer. I've worked for non-design companies as an in-house designer, as a solo freelancer, and now for my own small design agency. So yes to all the above.
Ooh, Nolan gets to checkbox everything. I get to checkbox.
He's well-rounded.
I get to checkbox self-employed only. I mean, for a brief time, I was on staff at a trade show company. I gave my resignation on my 1-year anniversary there because I just wasn't for me. And then I also worked at a print shop and, you know, was employed, but all the design work has been independent. But I will say, as an employer, currently an 11-person design studio, I do get to see the independent or the employee side of things. But yeah, I don't think I've truly ever been there myself in the presentation design realm.
Okay.
So I get to checkbox nothing. One. I get checkbox one.
Well, that's a big check. It's a big check. Okay. Well, I've worked for corporations. Over the years, where I enjoyed being a jack of all trades, including presentation work. I just fell naturally into it. And that was before I started my ad agency stints, where I was not a designer, but on the account side, but being exposed to great creative, I had that benefit, but I was also doing all the new business presentations. So that carried through from the corporate side. You go to the advertising agency world, you understand the corporate side. They came to me for presentations. So I'm going to check off those two big boxes. How about you, Lori?
So I can check a couple. I have been internal at several printing companies in my early years. However, at that time, I wasn't doing any presentation work. So I moved into being independent ever since, and that's when the presentation work came in, but all of it has been design, from the beginning. So a lot of that dealing with clients and, you know, having a say and just that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I can check two boxes.
Well, listen, just while you're talking, Lori, you mentioned something earlier that struck me, and you talked about setting up all of your design team to act like independent designers. They're internal at your agency, your firm,
yeah,
but they act as independent designers. Can you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's our goal. And maybe it's for our sanity more than anything else. I mean, there's only so much that Troy and I can do. You know, there at some point, in order to grow and be efficient, you've got to give that control over, which sometimes is hard to do. So yes, our design team does perhaps function like an agency, like we talked about earlier, but we do consider our designers as independent designers, again, as much as it's reasonably possible. And of course, a newer designer, they're not going to have as much freedom as our seasoned TLC designers. So our team is empowered to talk directly with clients versus going through an account exec, which would be Troy or myself. And our team does, they know the project needs. We have a very robust projects management system in place. And our team is empowered to make decisions about projects. The only caveat to that is in the billing matters. You know, depending on the situation, usually that billing, that estimating, that's handled by Troy or myself. Again, that's that higher business level, I guess. But really, I think it's all about client relationship. And so our goal is to empower our internal designers to function like independent designers and run with projects directly with a client as much as possible.
I have another question then.
Yeah.
So in your structure, who are the designers responsible for the strategy part of it? Or have you worked with your clients to develop messaging and the flow of the presentation and turn it over to the designers?
Good question. We have a couple designers that can do that.
Okay.
We have several that, you know, they just don't have that experience. And so a lot of times that might be a brainstorming session as a project kicks off. Several of us will meet, we'll discuss it, and we might discuss messaging at that point. That's
so a good... pure production. Some of them
pure,
are.
Some are pure production. And then some are more seasoned designers. We can give them a script and say, go, and they can think it through and they can make suggestions to the clients. I mean, that's our goal.
It's got to happen every once in a while. They make a commitment to a client and then you realize what?
The answer is yes, Nolan.
The answer is yesterday.
I didn't know we could do that. Okay.
But more important, more usually it's Lori saying, why did you say yes, we could do that? We've never done that in our career. It's like,
Troy is the biggest offender. Troy is the biggest offender.
Like, you learn by doing. This is a learn situation.
Exactly.
We're getting paid to learn.
Stretching.
It'll take us 45 hours, but we're only going to charge 20, but we'll learn. Okay. Go ahead.
I was saying, and then yesterday we had one of our designers was on a call with a client and he just committed to us doing a video in 2 weeks. And I'm like, no. So we're going to, that's what I'm going to be doing after this is figuring out how we make that happen.
Oh, so you're going to make it happen.
Well, we're going to try.
You're going to try. Okay.
Yeah. It's a long-term client and we've done the project before and we have timelines in place. And for some reason, everybody on the client side decided they could cut it all in half or more. we'll see. So, I think that this, what we're just talking about here is independent and internal and, you know, it kind of clarifies that this is not necessarily about the position that someone has. You know, working for a large corporate as part of a, you know, a department or being a solo designer or what else can we say? Being a designer within an agency. I think what I come at is, and I'm kind of now clarifying what I said above, I think it's more about the mindset and the comfort level with how you approach, and I'll say enforce, presentation design design decisions. Does that make sense? So I think it's more about the mindset and where you think you're allowed to do things.
Yeah. Again, as someone sort of has been on staff, I want to be careful with what we're saying here. I don't want to disparage staff designers by saying they have no agency. Again, pun. Uh-huh. And sort of like, I don't want to say like, if you're on staff, you're just following orders and saying, yes, I do this. Yes, I do that, whatever. And similarly, just because you're a freelancer doesn't mean that you have more say over a client project.
Agreed.
I mean, in fact, mm-hmm. being on staff in some cases may actually give you more leeway and more freedom to push back because you have the job. Whereas, you know, if you're a hungry freelancer, you might be, and I've certainly seen this, you know, they might be overly obsequious to a client, like for fear of losing that income. Like you're always mm-hmm. just looking for the next job, which does not make you a good designer and does not, you know, do the best for your client. But, you know, those are realities. But I think it comes down to who your situation, right? I mean, you can be a very successful independent designer, work for yourself, freelance, and be able to, you know, push back on clients. And then you can also be, you know, work for a great boss at a, you know, organization, and they give you all the freedom in the world. And of course, those things can be completely reversed. So, you know, it's situational.
Hey, if anybody needs it, in the show notes for this episode, I will put how to spell obsequious and the definition.
That's your word of the day.
Hey, I'm pretty proud. I was close enough for Google to tell me how to get there. I was off by one letter.
My high school English teacher, Mr. Hagopian, would be very proud of you, Nolan.
Oh, wow.
Wow, Hagopian and obsequious.
Right?
So on that, I completely agree. I see a full spectrum of talents and kind of range of, and I'm going to put this with hyphens between it, you know, I do as I'm asked, and that's all I'm here to do. And this is how it should be done. Those are kind of like attitudes or kind of a mindset to approaching presentation design, because presentation design is not a it's a learned skill. There's not a whole lot of training on how to really make visuals for presentation design work. And I just see this kind of back and forth. Anyways, just side note there.
Well, in my experience, first of all, I love working with internal designers, and I'm picturing, you know, a company that has a brand or several internal brands. They know their brand. In many cases, they've designed the style guide that they've got all the answers. You know, if you're having an issue with photography, you know, they're a great source to go to saying, hey, I can't find a photo that matches this. You know, what do you suggest? I think internal folks have a lot of things that sometimes us on the outside, if you will, if you're an independent designer, you just don't have access to. But one thing, my experience working with internal or staff designers, they do have a lot of say in the design process. You know, whether you're internal or independent, I really think it's your level of design or your level of presentation experience that's going to inform those decisions. So someone with little presentation experience, again, it could be internal, it could be independent, is potentially not going to enforce some of those common presentation standards. They're not going to push. They're not going to have a strong direction they want to go. But as we grow in experience, I think we're able to approach presentation design with more intention. A personal example would be working with a particular internal MarCom department. I work with a lot of different designers there. And I think we might agree an internal MarCom department is a lot of a place where a lot of new designers find themselves. And I think that's a great place to start. You get so much good experience. And I find myself training the newer or the less experienced designers, specifically less experienced with presentation design. And over time, we become a much better team as we collaborate on presentation. And the little distinction is there have been designers that are seasoned, but they don't do presentation work. But if I can establish that relationship, and if they will just listen, they start to get an idea of, oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
They just would listen.
Ah, that's the key phrase. So again, it's almost not internal or independent. It's more the level of experience. And to your point, Nolan, the willingness to learn.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I completely agree on, well, with many things that you said, but to start, I love to work with internal designers because it stretches me creatively. It can, you know, they bring a different perspective because they're not presentation designers typically. It reminds me of maybe they're more up with some trend that I missed or something. And so I really love the opportunity to look at it from a different perspective. One thing that I've found missing often though is that strategic, and I brought it up earlier, it's that strategic component. And I know we are all kind of, what's the word Steffi uses, unicorns, in the sense that we have business heads and design heads, and not everybody can have that, and everybody can be assigned a role within an organization or an agency or on by themselves. For example, I position my organization is a strategic consulting firm versus a design firm, because there's more coming to the picture than just design. As a matter of fact, my most recent retainer client was the result of proposing an annual plan in collaboration with the marketing department. And so that helped me win my business. For example, working with that same client and on a board meeting presentation, the internal designer is working with me and mostly in just a cleanup format. And I'm not saying any of this is bad, just I want to clarify that. But our relationship is cleanup. I come back and I'm talking to the client, the presenters, the marketing department about headlines and flow and, you know, are we going to use this 2021 year-end results, or are we going to say in 2021 we came out swinging or something? And you know, there's more of that collaboration that needs to happen in a consulting environment.
Nice.
I think that could be a future conversation topic right there, is how we position ourselves within the presentation design space, something like that.
Exactly.
And, mm-hmm. and not only that, Sandy, and I just have to caveat, so often we hear about strategic and we almost think about this, yeah, we get to start with a client at the script level, at the storyboard level, and we help them craft their whole presentation. Let's be real. That happens occasionally. So often, I think, Sandy, to your point, I'm working on a presentation and no, I don't, we're beyond crafting the whole thing,
right.
but it's like, oh yeah, what about your flow? What about your headlines?
Your headline.
I love that.
Exactly.
And I think
good
that's,
point.
That's mm-hmm. a huge value add that yeah. we bring. Again, internal or independent.
Right.
Well, it's almost as if this is a classic struggle when you have a C-suite, whether it be an mm-hmm. individual executive or something that are very high maintenance, if you will. And they only want to see what they want to see. And they don't know what they, I've heard you guys say this over and over. People don't know what they don't want until they see what they don't want.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a conversation I have all the time with my trainees when I talk about trying to use pie charts less. And then they say, well, do you ever use pie charts? And I have to say that sometimes I do. I mean, there are some rare cases where I think they actually work, but probably more often I get, you know, I show alternatives to clients and they come back and they say, yeah, but I'm comfortable with my pie charts. And I have the conversation and explain, you know, well, you know, I think this is actually clear and blah, blah, blah. And they say, yeah, but I like my pie charts, or my boss just likes them. They've been using mm-hmm. them for 20 years. And of course, there is something to be said for familiarity, right? So if you've been doing the same report for 20 years as pie charts, like you understand it clearly by that point. But also, you know, you can ask again, you can explain. And then at some point, okay, you're the client. And, you know, just mm-hmm. like if we tell our painter we'd like to, you know, put pink polka dotted, you know, wallpaper up, you know.
He's going to do
might
it.
Say,
she?
Yep.
She?
Just
she? Right.
Say no mm-hmm. to wallpaper, people. Wallpaper
Nolan,
is a no.
That could be in your future.
Wallpaper?
We had a full-blown pink room here, and we never planned on that. But we got convinced.
Well, my office was pink before when I moved in, because the previous owners, it was the girls, one of the girls' bedrooms. And now, of course, it's orange. But yeah.
Hey, Nolan, I have a question on
yes?
that. On the Better deck, because I don't have it in front of me, is there a single pie chart in those examples?
There is. That's one of the options.
Oh! Pie
chart. Now, of course, it's not done as a pie chart. There's no data. It's for text and things like that. But, you know,
okay.
You could.
Just curious.
Yeah.
Okay. Slightly different topic here, but I think this fits well. And I realize you guys could probably take and run this with a full episode. But how about everyone lists one or two items that you consider a presentation-specific design need?
Sandy, you go first.
Okay. Let's see. So scenario is I'm not a presentation designer, but I should understand these things or
just almost like tips, like,
okay.
Things yeah. we run into all the time that we just wish that we wouldn't have to keep communicating.
Mm. Okay. I've said this before, but I am amazed at how often I run into trained designers who fail to use a grid in PowerPoint, on their PowerPoint slides. It just stuns me every single time. So my tip is that you always set up a grid.
Okay, I like okay. that.
Troy?
I think I'm going to yeah. go a little more technical. And I find presentation-specific design needs is knowing the difference between a slide master, a slide layout, and slide level are key. And they're often ignored or not leveraged or just broken because somebody will jump in and change a master layout to meet their slide without mm-hmm. realizing that it's going to impact anybody else that uses that layout for another slide or change.
Just happened to me.
Oh, yeah. It does. Oh, and yeah. it's like these are presentation-specific things. And I find that designers, you know, like another designer that's not a presentation designer, they will often do it because they see the power of it and they go, oh, I could just do this and it'll fix it for me. But they don't realize how many other, the ripple effect of what down the road could become problematic. And then a similar one would be knowing the page size of your presentation, because I just dealt with this, and why that page size is used and the implications of it not being aligned with the other presentations that you need to combine. And I'll go one step further and say, if you use the, let's hear, what is it? When you format your text, you can have the, you know, size shape to the text. Well, when you resize it, it changes the font size and all of a sudden the shapes can all change. I mean, there's just implications of using a non-standard page size, or if you're using a non-standard page size, letting everybody else know this is the master page size, because there are design, presentation design, wait, hold, how'd you say it, Lori? Presentation specific design needs that can be impacted by not knowing those two things. There's mine.
I like it. I like it. Well, I think a lot, and this kind of flows into what I was thinking, but I think on that point, Troy, a lot of people, they're designing a presentation and they are not thinking of it beyond the 20 slides they're designing. And they're not thinking future, that these slides might get used again. They might get reused, brought into another presentation. All they care about is getting that those 20 slides done. And it's getting people to think that bigger picture. And in this case, I'm going to take us to the bigger picture. I wish that everyone would remember that in most cases, the presentation needs to be looked at essentially in show mode. You know, your content isn't individual slides. It's a journey from one slide to the next. And so there's the basics. If you have content, you know, headlines that are jumping from slide to slide, that's not professional. It's distracting. And there's other things. You know, if content isn't consistent from, you know, throughout your presentation, the audience is going to pick up on those inconsistencies. It's going to cause bumps in that journey. So I just absolutely wish people would check their slideshow and see how
that's
things
where
will
you
look
just in. You're able to decide if your presentation is calm, someone wants to look at it and browse through it, or stressful. And people may not, you don't look at it and say, that's a stressful slide while you're watching it. It's just a feeling you get when it's all done.
Yeah.
There's a phrase that I use all the time, and I think I heard it from Nancy Duarte first, which is visual tension. And I love that. And whenever I sort of, you know, I'm training people and explain, you know, these things are too close, or they're not aligned, or they're, you know, crunched, they fill out too, like, it just creates a visual tension. And it's, sometimes it's a sort of an ineffable, there you go, there's another word, sort of an ineffable. See how many I can get. For me, yeah. I think one of the big things is brand guidelines, and the important part of brand guidelines is knowing how much to hold to them and how much not to. Because always, you know, right, we ask clients, like, do you have brand guidelines? Oh, yes, we do. And then the next question is, okay, or do we have to, you know, hold them to the letter? Or, and it's always funny. Every client's different. Sometimes clients are like, oh, here are our brand guidelines. You know, you can follow those, but, you know, we don't like our colors or our font. So really, you know, you can do anything you want. So like, okay, so no brand guidelines, basically. Right. Like, well, you know, just read them.
Watch this. I'm going to put Lori on the spot. Lori, do you recall a certain CEO that had brand guidelines who insisted on using yellow, even though it was strictly forbidden by the guidelines?
I'm going to leave now.
Well, I believe the key the operative word in that sentence is CEO. And
it's CEO. Yeah. No.
Do whatever. Do whatever they want.
Their key color was yellow. And so we had designed the entire 3 days
it's
of presentations.
That's the opposite of what I just said. Yeah.
And the new CEO, didn't like yellow. And literally overnight, we took every presentation and we replaced the key brand color of yellow.
So how was that project for Sprint?
Yeah. Not Sprint, but.
They're gone now, aren't they?
That's funny.
I think they are gone. I think it was because
of
the yellow.
More or less,
yeah. Yeah, it was all came down to that yellow.
Now they're pink.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk about some of the overall pros and cons. Pros and cons of being on staff or internal, right? And being independent.
I like it.
You know, like scheduling, I don't know, vacations, what?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the, you know, I think staff versus freelance applies to any profession, not just to design. Like, you get vacation, you get health insurance, you get to work with the same people and be at a desk 9 to 5.
You get to walk away from the job.
Yeah, those are, you know, 9 to 5 desk job. That's a pro for some people. That's a con for others. But again, like I said before, I think it largely comes down to your employer. You know, from my experience, I had employers that, at least initially allowed me to do a lot, you know, allowed me a lot of freedom and build a department and spend money and hire interesting people and experiment and, you know, work with big budgets and big clients on projects that I would never have gotten myself. And that was all great and awesome. And then the negatives, at least at maybe my last staff job, was, you know, that my, you know, my role ultimately shifted from internal partner to internal service. And suddenly, you know, I was being told what to do by people who were junior to me. And my own boss, who had other people to please, would say, don't make trouble, you know, just make it happen. And, you know, now I work way more hours than I did then, but it's different. Like, you know, when it's 6 p.m. And you're on staff and you really want to go home and somebody who hasn't met their deadline tells you, just stay until I'm done. That's not cool, you know, but if I'm staying up late to do something like I've been doing all this week, you know, it's my own call.
Were you salaried at that point? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's that conversation of hourly versus salary.
Oh, yeah.
That's... And the salary negative is that you can be asked to stay late.
Yeah. I have a very clear memory of being on vacation. I used to take these nice solo ski trips out west, and I have this memory of sitting on my sort of cheap hotel bedroom eating pizza. Like, you know, I would just go out ski for a week, and like that's all I do, stay in a cheap hotel, sitting like eating pizza, and my phone rang, and I looked at it, and it was the president of my company. And so there I've got like piece of pizza, I've got like, and I'm like working, trying to answer questions for him, and I said, I don't like this. I mean, that wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back, but I was like,
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that coming back from wine country and getting the call, and something happened that came down on me. And oh my gosh, yes, that's the worst feeling.
But, you know, working for yourself, you take those calls as well at the same time, right? I mean, there's
You do. Yeah. And it's different.
It's different, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, so I'm going to start with cons, and then I'll get into some pros of the positions. But so it could be like Nolan described, as an internal service versus an internal expert position. You can be an expert and viewed as an expert internally. And I think that comes from when presentation development is not thought of as a part of the communications mix. You know, we've all faced that. How many times do you get the brand guidelines and there's a picture of a PowerPoint slide? Period.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
There's no, it becomes an afterthought. So it's not like PR. There's a PR plan. There's not an advertising plan anyway. So it becomes an afterthought where someone realizes they need a presentation at the last minute and they run to the presentation specialist. There's no time for thinking. And I think, Troy, you mentioned politics earlier. I think also working internally is more political in my experience.
So you're in the middle of it, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Or I remember working internally, and we had presentation up on the wall, and I was with my boss, and the CEO came in. We were preparing him to deliver his presentation, and he said something and I spoke up. I said something back, which is my nature. And my boss went, if you guys can't see me, but I'm doing the cutthroat.
Yeah.
Be quiet, Sandy. You are not invited to this conversation.
Exactly.
Ouch. But,
okay. I know that was interesting. But anyway, on the other hand, in the right internal environment, and I've seen this as a pro, the ability to perhaps change or influence company branding and messaging. If you're positioned as an expert, life can be really, really great.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Go with that.
That's my pros and cons. Yeah.
I think those are amazing. So on the pro side, being internal employee, you know what? It's so much easier for life balance being internal, you know,
but I'm going to jump in here with a distinction though. Troy, you are always paid hourly, and Nolan, you come from a salary background. I think that's a huge distinction with the life balance. Cause if you're an hourly employee and you get called in after hours, at least you get time and a half, you get overtime, you get a little bump, at least in my experience, that was at least a little balm for the inconvenience. versus maybe a salary position, you might feel that you're just.
Yeah, the only time I've done salaried is at my own companies, and that was usually a low salary because I'm part of the line items.
We would get being on salary, we would get spot bonuses occasionally if we went over, you know, really over the line and blah blah blah, and it was whatever.
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you, Troy. Yeah. Keep going.
No, I just think you know, there are some perks to being not in charge of everything and having the weight of everything on there and having to deal with a company that hasn't paid you for 90 days and, you know, dealing with all that. On the con side, I mean, I do enjoy the freedom to pick projects and how to approach the project. Like, hey, let's make this into an animated video, this and that, where they may have spec something else. And, you know, kind of throwing those ideas out there because no one is over our shoulder like Sandy and saying, just cut it. Just do what they said. Don't do more. Like, we're going to do it. You know, I would say stress is a big factor. And there are stress on both sides of this equation. Internal, like the politics and just having to work within constraints can be stressful. As well as, you know, being that person that has to answer, be responsible for everything. I mean, I know at one point when we were in the print design world only, we were a bit younger than we are now, living in a very small little townhome with a couple of small children going, we're carrying like $100,000 in, you know, like this print job has to go right because we're responsible for the whole thing. And that was stress. you know, yes. Luckily we were very, very vigilant and nothing ever came back to, you know, be a problem, but you know, those are different types of stresses. Okay. I'm done.
such good comments. I mean, I'm thinking back to my internal days and yes, steady paycheck benefits sometimes, not always. You know, I got to manage a department. I love the camaraderie and I guess my biggest benefit was that set schedule. Like every once in a while, I think back, I'm like, oh, if I were an employee, I would be in front of the TV right now, just watching TV, you know, and having a nice dinner. But I will say, of course, the cons were a set paycheck. Like there were no necessarily big raises or you didn't have the ability to manage, you know, how much you want to grow and how far you want to advance. And certainly when, you know, independent, you know, you could do that. I could control my rate, the hours I work. I work a lot, but how many clients you go after. I traded a boss telling me what to do with people and other sources I'd consult for business advice and presentation learning. So that was probably one of the biggest pros in my mind. Not that you can't do learning. In fact, I really appreciate and admire seeing the internal folks at like the Presentation Summit and the Presentation Guild and other industry learning events because they've done a great job promoting the need for presentation learning to their boss and company. And I think that's something that all of us naturally as independents go after.
We should do an episode with some internal designers where we talk about wins and challenges. And it's been a while since I've been in that world. So I'm sure.
Do we have to like give them like voice altering things? So this anonymous person is going to tell us behind the scenes. But no one will ever know what company they work for.
I think some people can reveal who they work for.
Well, to that point, Nolan, do you think that some people, some of the solo designers come from an internal position and were tired of not being able to help presenters and presentations be their best by talking directly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said before, you know, if you're not respected or you don't get, if you're that kind of person that doesn't want to just, you know, clock in, clock out and do whatever, then you're in a situation where, you know, that's all you can do, then you're not going to last. Some people want to do that. Some people don't. And if you don't, I mean, being on staff is, being an internal designer is something we didn't really talk about, is fantastic for learning the ropes and getting tons of experience. And I mean, when I was at Edelman, I designed or oversaw like 500 new business pitches. And like, I know how to do those. And I'm done with them. Like, I know I've done enough in my life. I am done with them. But yeah, you get, you know, tons of experience and tons of just like, you know, it's that 10,000 hours of, you know, what's his name?
Experience. You know, experience. Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, exactly. Right? which you don't necessarily get being a solo person, especially if you're just a solo freelancer and you're not working with anybody else, there's a limit to how many projects and how much work you can do. Yeah. you know, if you're working in a department, you see lots more, you have your hands in more pies, you have, you know, people below you doing things, and you get, so you just get exposed to a lot more.
Nolan, you just said something I think is so important. I think there's some people that are wired to be more of a production designer. Mm-hmm. That's their happy place. Set them down with some tasks, a deck, and they are happy as a clam. Is that the right phrase? And I venture to say that all of us here are perhaps, I love production design, but we perhaps fall into that other category of being more of a change maker or a growth mindset, if you will. And again, there's nothing wrong with either one. We need those production designers. Mm-hmm. We have a couple on our staff that I adore because I can give them anything and they go right to town and they do a fantastic mm-hmm. job. And I like to think that they're really happy.
You're right.
Yeah. I personally need some variety, and I doesn't happen all the time, but when I get like a big InDesign like paper or something that ends up being just a lot of like churning production work, I really look forward to it. I put on some movies, I put on my headphones, and I just sort of go to town and get lost in that world, and I don't have to make too many design decisions, and it's nice to have that as an occasional project.
Absolutely. It's kind of a no-brainer. You mm-hmm. get to go on your design autopilot. I think, Laura, you've made an excellent point, and sadly the term slide jockey mm-hmm. is a pejorative. But there is a place for it. Yeah. There's a place for a person who is a presentation specialist. Nolan, I know you don't like that, mm-hmm. but that's a real, real term now. It's the guild's lowest level of certification. A presentation specialist knows how to design in PowerPoint.
And I get, there's that is a very valued position. Again, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. appreciate those people on our staff that are that's their mindset, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Based on Nolan's small business roundtable each year at the Presentation Summit, which is kind of like an amazing mini event to be at, everyone, lots of people there talk about moving from employee to independent designer, and there are a lot of stories of frustration about not being able to do everything they feel is best for their client, or, you know, learn or expand. And So I think there is, Laurie, to what you're saying there, a lot of solo designers come from an internal position where frustration is, I mean, it could be with the pay, it could be with mm-hmm. opportunities, you know, there, I think that's definitely a pathway for people to get in there. And I think Nolan, you kind of helped facilitate that.
Do you think it's tougher for them to make that transition now than when, say, we jumped in?
I think it's easier.
I would think it's easier too.
I did a paper several years back that said it's not fair for us seasoned designers versus these young independent designers. I mean, think about it. We had to buy, Laurie, how much was the first Mac you bought?
Like $6,500 for a little Mac 2CI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was with the college discount.
So, you know, you got Adobe Creative Cloud. You can sign up for, you know, if you're a student, you get it for $29.99 a month, or, you know, this and that. We were buying multiple versions of Adobe Creative Suite for, you know, $900, $1,100.
Yeah.
You know, the upfront cost of becoming a designer now, and there's so many resources out there for learning and seeing what's possible and what you should be doing.
A lot of the software is free, right?
Yeah.
I think
the crux is always going to be, how do you get your clients?
Yeah.
That's right.
I think that's always going to be the challenge. Mm-hmm. And some people are naturally more sales oriented or market themselves than others. And that's going to be a consistent challenge.
And that's the hardest thing always when I'm talking to people, sort of counseling people on, you know, should I go freelance or whatever? It comes down to the clients. And some people, and what I always say is, like, if you're on staff, you can't leave without having clients. So you've got to build those up. Mm-hmm. While you're on staff. And that's really the biggest thing. And I've seen people leave, you know, and then come back to staff jobs because they just couldn't get the clients, manage the clients.
Well, it could also be a mindset of how they're going to approach it. And do they have that drive to tell people, here's what it is? And, mm-hmm. you know, there is a comfort level, and something I kind of miss
And, you know, if you're on staff, you don't always need to do that client management, right? That sort of stroking and grooming and like, all right, yes, you're right. You know, we screwed up. Let's not lose you. I mean, all that kind of stuff sometimes, which sometimes you got to eat your hat on that. And it's, you know, that, you know, owning an agency, you've got to, there's client management. You got to keep them happy.
Nolan, you and I are in the same bucket. When you were on staff or with your company, did you, before you went independent, did you have a bunch of freelancers on the side, meaning you did your day job and then you worked all night on freelance?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's exactly what I did, the same thing. I did too. Same thing. And Sandy, yep. I think.
And that was really, and when you talked about getting extra money, that was always my, you know, I could go home and stay up till midnight and whatever money I got, that was all gravy. Like that was,
Exactly.
So, you know, it wasn't overtime for my company. It was, hey, this is my project, my money coming right in my pocket.
Yeah. My first year I made $10,000 and I remember just, whoa, you know, as a side gig with a real job, just staying up till midnight, doing something now and then. And it was awesome. So that's a great transition.
And it gives you, yeah. And it gives you the variety too. You know, if your day job is doesn't have as much variety, you know, to it.
So what we're saying is if you are an internal designer, do not quit your job and go independent unless you've got lots of freelance clients on the side.
Or a semblance of them. You don't have to have you know, I had some clients. And then, of course, as soon as I quit, I had more, you know, because, you know, for various reasons. But you've got to have something, you know, to go to.
Yep. I had one client that I ultimately quit for, you know, because that was a good chunk of my business. So, but awesome. So I think we're coming to the end of our conversation, but before we leave and Troy wraps it up, is there anything else that we need to bring up or are we doing?
Well, this was not a plug for everybody to become independent designers. You should, internal and designers are fantastic. There's a bigger conversation there. No, I think this has been great. I would happily wrap up this conversation. It's been phenomenal. This has been a great conversation. This has been real topics and real insights. Thank you, Lori, for joining us. Thank you, Sandy and Nolan, for kind of going along with my crazy conversation ideas. I think this worked. I'm very excited about it. I hope everyone had a great time being a part of another Presentation Design Conversation. Thank you for joining us in 2022. And that's a wrap for us talking about internal versus independent presentation designers. And I think we're going to jump over to do some pro and tech tips right now.
Let's do some pro and tech tips. The first one is a good old-fashioned PowerPoint tip. Remember we used to do those? Remember like we used to do like, here's how you can do something. And this is something that I learned recently through a whole Twitter thread. John Schwabish, who we've talked about before, a whole bunch of people ended up jumping in on different ways of creating brackets in PowerPoint. Because if you know, the bracket tool itself is not good. And then if you try to create one with like three lines, they don't exactly match up and it looks terrible and everything. This is the way to do it. You make a rectangle, all right, just make a PowerPoint rectangle, then make sure it has an outline and no fill. Then with it selected, right click, do edit points, okay? And then at the bottom right one, I mean, you can do any corner, but at the bottom right one, right click that point and do open path. Okay. Yes. So that is now going to open your box and it will get, you'll still have the 4 points. Just go ahead and select that opened point and delete it. And now you have a bracket with, well, it's 4 points, but it's open and you can rescale it. You can make it as wide or narrow, whatever, and your corners will be perfect. And so the way I'd been doing it for years was, I just created them in Illustrator, had it exported them as vector, and I just had been copying and pasting for years. But absolutely, if you have to make one on a fly, and I have a whole bunch of different lines like that, but on the fly, this is the way to do it. This will give you a perfect bracket.
I thought you were going to go a completely different route. You know how when you want to have, let's say your title has brackets on either end. Well, they won't move if you go, you know, get taller or... I use gradients on the, I put a border on it and then I set the gradients to yep. be
okay.
on either end mm-hmm. so that you have that bracket that moves with the placeholder.
That's another great tip. Bit of a yeah. grading. You can't quite get
on the edge. You can't quite get
yeah.
it. You can't quite get 100% a solid edge. I just go to Noun yep. Project, type in bracket, and get SVG objects and put them in there.
Wow, there you go.
There is that.
But that doesn't solve Sandy's point of it staying with the element. I totally get that.
For sure I'm going to do that because it's such a mess too. I mean, that wasn't my tip. Should I give my other tip?
Yeah. yeah.
Okay. And this is kind of from the world of weirdness, but I've tried. So, you know, in PowerPoint, we have the ability using, is it WordArt, to make circles with our text. And
oh, yeah.
Not, yeah. And
like
I
text
think
on a path?
Is that what it's called?
Well, an Illustrator.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah. In PowerPoint, it's you pick at the, you want it to arc up or you want it to arc down and you can type circles. Mm-hmm, well, this font is out there and I have not used it yet. So because I'm not going to spend money on it, if I'm not going to use it, I don't have a reason for it, but there's a font called Radius. And yeah. it is a typeface that literally types in circles. It's kind of ugly. Apparently the designer had to use these not rounded corners to make it work, but maybe I should have put this in announcements instead, but it's something to take a look at. There's an article in AIGA. You may have seen this, Lori and Troy. Will it go round in circles? Radius, a new typeface, says yes. And it's a very interesting approach to text that goes in circles.
I will take a look at it.
I did not see that, but that's cool. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah,
wow.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I've got one. Art Institute of Chicago. Phenomenal place in and of itself.
Love it.
They just put, fairly recently, I think, they have 40,000 files, most of them are images, that are free for download. In addition, most of them fall under Creative Commons Zero, CC0, which means free content with no restrictions. So you could use them in presentation work or anything mm-hmm. else. So as example, I was looking for cover art, and I found a Sunday on Le Grand, whatever, a Sorot. Thank you. You know, it's one of my all-time favorite artists. And when I downloaded it, it was a 2.89 megabyte, 3,000 pixel by 2,000 pixel, 96 DPI JPEG. I mean, it was great. They also have this ridiculous reference system file name that is absolutely zero help in identifying what it is. But all these images are in there. It's there. Art collection, and they're making it available to the public to be utilized so that art is out there. They had other things. They had photos of book covers and sculpture, a lot of files, but it's pretty interesting. I will put the link in there because it is pretty crazy to find, but it's under an open access thing. And this one's open access images. But cool. Yeah, if you need imagery work for anything, this is kind of a really cool option.
That is amazing. I see there's Van Gogh's The Bedroom. I mean, how cool is that?
And the CCO or zero public domain or Creative Commons thing, that's everything, right? That's like commercial, non-commercial. Mm-hmm. You can pretty much
it's
use,
the most open-ended Creative Commons. So I will get the link and put it out there for everybody.
Thank you.
And there are a lot of museums that have been doing that little by little, and there's so much out there, and I'm so glad they're doing it.
It's really cool. Excellent. Okay, well, I have a tech tip, but my tech tip isn't quite as grand, and it's not PowerPoint-based, but it is practical, gosh darn it. the sad story is, in this day and age, we have had our mailbox broken into multiple times over the holiday season. Very sad.
Oh, no. Do they steal anything?
We luckily know, but several of our neighbors, they hit it at the end of the month looking for paychecks. Is what the post office is telling us. So, side note, there is something called informed delivery, USPS informed delivery. It is national. You go onto the USPS, and I'll put the link in there, but you go on the USPS.com website and you register, and every day you get a little email that gives you a photo of each of the mail pieces that will be delivered to you that day. It is, and occasionally it'll say, you know, no photo for this, or you have a package, no photo, or whatever. But it basically informs you what will be delivered that day so you can track it better. And in our case, know what people stole. But anyway, it's been amazing. It's really fun. Like, oh, I don't need to get the mail today. It's all junk mail. So
wow,
whatever.
That's awesome.
So I'm just saying, it's a really
take it.
It's a really cool thing. So
it is
informed delivery.
Nice.
Thank you.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional presentation design agency. Check out tlccreative.com. If you have a virtual or hybrid event that needs a space for your attendees to kind of experience the event, check us out at vxpmeetings.com. And with the world suddenly closing off to live events, we are extremely busy there. It's pretty darn amazing. And we have a full year, I'm very excited about this, of presentation topics that is unfolding at thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, and thebetterdeckdeck.com. And if you're interested in online training or in-person training, for that matter, you can also go to nolanhamescreative.com. That's enough URLs. There you go.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz and the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and I'm on Twitter as @PPTWiz.
And I'm Lori Collar with TLC Creative Services. You've heard all the URLs, but as always, it was so great to hang out with you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Oh.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available at the Presentation Podcast website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. Also through the website, contact the show hosts with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated, and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.
Okay, I have one thing to say though. These internal designers, we only get to meet, we meet them in our everyday world, but in terms of our industry, I think a lot of them stay, we don't get to see them because they're internal. You know, we only see we don't see the solid internal designer because they're just ingrained in their internal design and they just don't know. So there's a whole audience that will never hear this.